Please the court, opposing counsel, my name is Joel Bacon. I represent the appellant Bryson Davenport. This case is about whether or not the district court used the correct standard in awarding physical custody to the appellee for the party's two children. In awarding physical custody, the court made two interrelated errors. First, the court used the wrong standard with respect to the award. It used a primary caregiver, per se, primary caregiver standard instead of the statutorily required best interest of the child standard. It then compounded that error by focusing on the wrong time period. Instead of focusing on the time period that was roughly a year or so before trial, as this court has directed, it focused on the time period before that.
Because you don't really have a problem with the primary caregiver standard if it was applied in the right time frame, right? Because in your brief, you argue that exact thing, that your client was the primary caregiver in the 19 months before trial.
Primary caregiver is certainly a proper factor to be used in the best child analysis. I would say it cannot be the only factor, and I think the Supreme Court has been very clear on that. That it's improper to use a per se primary care factor. And our argument would be, it's true that our client did act as the primary care provider for the 19 months that led up to the time of trial. But there's more factors that go into it than just that as well. I mean, also, another consideration that would support that award here is it created continuity and stability for the children. They had always lived in Lincoln their entire lives. That's where the oldest child was going to school. There would have been that degree of continuity would have continued had the children remained in Lincoln on a primary basis. In addition to that, it would have maximized the amount of parenting time each parent would have got. My client is a seasonal worker. He doesn't work during the winter, but he works a lot during the summer. The flip side to that is the appellee works in the school system. Because she works in the school system, that means that she gets the summers off. So what the court's award here ends up doing is giving parenting time to my client during the summer when he's working and when the appellee would be present.
Didn't she have a summer job as well, the mother?
I don't recall. I guess I can't recall quite.
For the daycare?
She may have worked part-time. I think that's where the children, I think, would have attended. Yeah. Yes, Your Honor.
The court did, though, beyond discussing the primary caretaker or caregiver, make a best interest finding, didn't it?
There was no finding at all in the written order. In the court's comments following trial, which I have right here, Your Honor, the court indicated, I think it's worth maybe citing it at length. And so let me just speak to custody at this point, because I'm pretty clear in my mind as to what I'm going to do. I think this is a case that I often refer to as nobody doubted that you could, but you didn't kind of case. I think this is clearly a case where until January of 17, Mom was the one who did the heavy lifting. Not that Dad didn't do anything, nobody is. I'm certainly not saying that, but Ms. Gardner talked about a division of responsibilities, and I don't think it was a very even division, if that's what it was at all. It's clear to me that Mom was the primary caregiver. I think that would be in the best interest of these children to be with Mom. That's the extent of any discussion, and the entire focus there is who was the primary caregiver. And again, it's not who was the primary caregiver in the 19 months leading up to this, who was the primary caregiver during the course of the children's entire lives. And I guess the analysis is, well, I guess 6 years Mom was the primary caregiver and 2 years Dad was the primary caregiver, so six is more than two, and we're gonna give the award then to the mother.
Well, we do a de novo review, so tell us what the best evidence is to convince us on our de novo review that the court abused its discretion.
Yeah, I think the best evidence is what I alluded to earlier, which is my client, to the extent he had shortcomings before January of 2017, when the appellee made the decision she needed to move to Holdridge, and I appreciate that was driven by issues outside of her control, but she made that decision. He then, in her words, she testified that he stepped up. He stepped into that role, and that provided continuity and stability for the children, continuity and stability that would have continued had the court made the proper determination. So those are the best factors. What our client did for the 19 months before trial is the best evidence of why the court made an error here. And beyond that, like I mentioned earlier, it also maximizes the amount of parenting time that each parent is going to be able to have with the child. And again, I think it had the court made the correct decision, it would have created that level of continuity and stability. That's the focus here should not be on who made the most mistakes 3 years ago, or who should be awarded for being the primary caregiver for the most years during the course of a child's lifetime. It should be on what's best for these children. Mm-hmm. And our goal here is not to punish the appellee. Our goal here is to say what's best for these children and provide what is
wasn't,
their, in their
wasn't
best
there
interest.
Substantial evidence in the record that mom continued to do the types of things she had done when she was living in the marital home?
She was absolutely still involved
she
in the
child. She
stayed
connected, she was making appointments, she was deciding, you know, important issues related to the
there
kid.
There was evidence to that effect. There was also evidence that on a day-to-day basis, my client was the one who was there.
Was there also some evidence still of drug paraphernalia or drug use during that 19-month period?
No. All of that was before. The evidence was my client stopped using, to the extent he was using marijuana, he stopped using that.
Both of them were
There was evidence
users.
That both of them were, yeah. were users. And all that was before, and I think that gets to the point, that's the wrong time period. The right time period is let's look at the 2 years leading up to trial.
And this was a sole custody award? It wasn't a joint custody award?
Joint legal custody, that's not an issue.
But primary physical
custody is an issue.
The record suggests that these two parents get along fairly well in parenting these children. Would that be a fair assessment?
The record suggests that during the initial breakup, there was a rough period,
sure.
a bit of a rough period of time. By the time trial got, I think the evidence was pretty much undisputed that they were communicating and working better than average.
And there was not a claim that either was an unfit parent.
This is not a fitness case at all.
So it seems fairly close in terms of both of them are able to take care of these children. They communicate well together. The kids, by all accounts, are thriving. No big problems with the children. So it is a close case, it seems. Do we, in those situations, give more credence to what the trial court saw and observed of the parties in making its decision?
So part of the standard of review would be that you give discretion to the court in its determination. I think that presupposes that the court used the correct legal standard, because if the court wasn't focused on the right things, I think that's inherently an abuse of discretion because it affects my client's legal rights and the manner in which that determination is being made.
But we can't know all the things that may have gone through the judge's mind as she was listening to this evidence, right? I understand it was very limited what she expressed on the record, and there was nothing in the written order to guide us. And hence our de novo review, we can take a fresh look at the evidence, and as Judge Moore is alluding to, if it's close both ways, then how can we say it was an abuse of discretion for the court to make the decision?
I think the route to getting to the abuse of discretion stand, did the court look at the right time period? Because if the court looked at the wrong time period, I mean, this court has been very clear on that. You don't, it's not a tally up everything that's happened over the course of the children's lives. So if the court was looking at the wrong time period, which its order suggests that it viewed my client in a negative light because before January of 2017, he didn't step up.
But isn't part of the other case law that we have is that in determining how something is going to go in the future, you're allowed to look back to see how it's gone in the past. So how do those coexist?
I think that's certainly you look back in the past, but if we look back in the past here, what we see is that, again, how much my client was involved in the parenting before January 2017 was in dispute. What's not in dispute is that in the 19 months from January 2017 until trial, he stepped it up. He went into that role of being a good parent, and that's your best evidence of how he's going to respond in the future. When he needed to step up, he did step up.
But it's appropriate for the court to look back over the entire life of these children, isn't it?
I think it certainly could look back over the course.
There wasn't any previous orders. This isn't a modification.
Certainly the court could look back over the course of the children's lifetime. I would express caution with that, because I think if it's okay, let's look back over the course of the children's lifetime, and 4 years ago something happened, but since then everything's been very good, and the parent has been doing a very good job. It seems to me like that should weigh pretty low in the totem pole of how we're making this decision.
So if the judge would have said, prior to January 2017, mom really took care of these kids. She was the one who was always there for them. Dad really didn't do much. From then until now, dad took on all those responsibilities for largely. But mom still stayed connected. And mom actually appears to engage the children more, period. Therefore, I find it's in the children's best interest. Is that what we're looking for? Is just that one more observation that links the past primary responsibility to the 19 months that mom was away but still being connected? If the court would have made that link, would we be here today?
I see the amount of time to answer. I think the answer to that question is, had the court done that, it would have been a much easier case for this court to decide. The court didn't do that. What we have from the judge, which is what we can go on, is that the judge focused on the wrong time period and only applied one particular factor instead of looking at everything.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. How much time did we take Mr. Bacon over?
35 seconds.
Would you please add that to the appellee's time? Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. May it please the court and opposing counsel, my name is Bergen Shoemaker with the firm of Bruner Frank Shoemaker out of Kearney, and I represent the appellee. We are asking that the court affirm the district court of Phelps County's order granting my client sole physical custody and joint legal custody of the party's children, Kinley and Kyler. The appellant argues that the court erred, basing its physical custody decision exclusively on the issue of who had been the primary caretaker. I think that both parties agree that that would be the incorrect standard to apply and that it needs to be a best interest analysis. The appellant argues that the court did not use the best interest analysis. However, we disagree. The Supreme Court has stated previously in Molsick versus Molsick that it's presumed in a bench trial that the judge was familiar with and applied the proper rules of law unless it clearly appears otherwise. In that case, the appellant had argued that because the district court didn't use the buzzwords best interests, that it applied the incorrect standard, and the Supreme Court did not buy that argument.
But here the buzzwords were used, but we don't have any details as to how the judge got there, because all the judge talked about was kind of the focus on primary caregiver before January of 2017. I'd like to know what evidence is in the record to support the decision that your client made to stay in Holdridge, understandable why she went to Holdridge after her father died, tended to her mother for the couple months. She went back and forth for a couple months, but then she made a decision to stay in Holdridge and leave the children with dad in Lincoln. What evidence is there to support that decision in light of the court awarding her custody now?
Sure. So there were, as the court's likely aware, there were 7 witnesses who testified, including Ms. Statler, on her behalf. And a number of those witnesses testified about the very difficult decision that she had in juggling her loyalty and responsibility to her mother and then her responsibility with her children as well. So it was very apparent that that was a very difficult decision for her to make. I think that it speaks volumes of Ms. Statler that she made the sacrifice, although it killed her to be away from her children, she made the sacrifice to allow the children to stay in Lincoln so that Kinley could finish out the school year.
But she didn't do anything right after that first, that first summer of 17.
Right.
She hadn't applied for custody or anything of that nature at that point. Nothing was filed.
I think there was a little bit of testimony, and I would have to refresh my memory, but I think there was a little bit of testimony that financial struggles played into that. And
she also had a boyfriend out in the Holdridge area.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. So I believe she testified that she only needs to spend about 2 hours of time tending to her mother per week.
Correct.
Correct? So with that, and then the other comment she made was she was in an unhealthy relationship with dad, her husband.
Right.
Is that enough? I mean, the family home where the kids resided with dad for 19 months versus mom who made a voluntary decision to stay in Holdridge, where she was living in her mom's house, where another older gentleman, disabled person, was being taken care of as well, mm-hmm. where the children had to sleep in the living room of the mom's grandma's house versus having their own bedroom, in the marital home. I'm trying to understand, in doing a best interest analysis, how the pendulum swung towards mom.
Sure. Well, I think that it's important to recognize that Miss Davenport's Miss Statler's family had always been residents of Holdridge, and so both she and the children were tightly connected to that community for years and years prior to her making the decision to move. At the time that she left Lincoln, at the time of her father's death, she was not employed, and so the job issue was not there. Once she decided several months down the road that she was going to make the move to Holdridge, she had found employment which she enjoyed and which would allow her to work in the same building that the children would be attending school in. That employment allowed her to transport the children to school each day, bring them back from school each afternoon, have a couple hours before, you know, doctor's clinics and things of that nature closed. And so that employment was really conducive to being a single parent. So I think the employment and the family aspect of it weighed heavily in her decision making there. As far as the appellant argues that the court looked at the wrong time period when determining the primary caregiver standard, and I'd like to touch on that a little bit. We admit that there is case law that a parent's behavior during the year or so before the hearing is of more significance, not the only significance, but more significance than the behavior prior to that time. Our position is that the court should look to a totality of the circumstances. So what is the reason behind dad stepping up, and what's the reason behind mom pulling back a little bit? As Judge Bishop touched on, you know, mom stayed involved as much as she possibly could. During the period from January to March, she was spending half of the week in Holdridge, half of the week in Lincoln. She was making appointments, she was communicating with daycare, she was financially supporting the family, doing everything
and
that
then
she could.
What was her contact from March of 2017 until the time of trial in August of 18?
So in March of 2017, she continued to do that. She testified that because Kinley was in school, she had to stay with dad in Lincoln the majority of the time, but she would bring her back on the weekends. But then she did testify that at least 1 week per month, and sometimes two weeks per month, she would bring Kyler back to Holdridge with her and take care of him while she was in Holdridge. So, and then throughout the summer, they alternated, I believe, week on, week off. I think that the testimony was clear that my client was desperately trying to co-parent with Mr. Davenport as much as she possibly could. And in arranging the parenting time and keeping things as fair as possible with the distance that was involved.
She didn't really have any concerns about Mr. Davenport's parenting, did she?
I believe the only significant concerns were the sunburn issue. She testified that she was previously concerned about marijuana use. However, since she left the home in January of 17, she didn't have any personal knowledge as to whether he was using, and if he was using, how much he was using. So she certainly admitted that. And then
and
there
what was the evidence of her last use of marijuana?
I believe she testified that she had never been a regular user of marijuana, but that she had used socially. So she wasn't, you know, partaking in that during her time with the children. But another concern that my client had was the amount of parenting responsibilities that Mr. Davenport's mother was in charge of. So she was transporting the children to school. She was bringing the children home from school and daycare. She was caring for them after school and daycare. She was making them breakfast. She was taking them school shopping. She was taking them to medical appointments. And so all of that's going on during Mr. Davenport's time when here sits Miss Statler in Holdridge, willing, able, and very desirous of providing for all of those responsibilities for her kids.
But wasn't there evidence that when she had the children with her, she would go out partying at night and leave the children with her mom?
There was evidence that that happened a couple times in the summer of 2017, and Ms. Statler did testify that those were mistakes she had made. She owned up to those and testified that she regretted that very much. But Mr. Davenport agreed that since the summer of 2017, that had not been an issue.
Wasn't there also evidence that she misled him about their relationship?
Yes, there was. And Ms. Statler did not try to cover that up or deny that at all. She was very upfront with that.
So there's evidence of her being dishonest with Mr. Davenport. Was there evidence of Mr. Davenport being dishonest with her?
I don't believe that there was. There's nothing coming to my mind right now. I know that there was evidence of Mr. Davenport speaking down to Ms. Statler, calling her names, being difficult to work with in transportation and things of those things along those lines. But at the end of the day, I think that I commended both parties during my closing argument that it really wasn't a mudslinging case. Both parties agreed that these kids have two fit parents, and really I think what it came down to is that both parents loved their kids and wanted custody of them.
So that leads me to the question, Mr. Bacon's argument that this arrangement imposed by the court does not maximize the time that the children have with the parents due to Mr. Davenport's work situation.
And I disagree with that. My client does, at the time of trial, she testified that she worked year-round. So she works with Holdridge Public Schools as a special education teacher throughout the school year, and then she has employment as the assistant director at a daycare in Kearney during the summer.
But Mr. Davenport has more time during the school year when he's less busy than he is during the summer months.
Sure, and only a couple months. I believe that his testimony was that he's unemployed for January and February, despite the fact that he's certainly capable of working during those months. But I think the testimony about how heavily he relied on his mother to care for the children during the school year speaks volumes. And so I certainly don't think that that argument is with merit. I also would like to point out that, as the court previously mentioned, that this court's responsibility is to review the record to determine whether the district court abused its discretion. And I think it's worth noting that the court was so confident in her order that she issued a ruling from the bench right away without even needing to take time to deliberate. And then in her written order, she confirmed that she found it to be in the best interest. And so I would just ask the court to consider that. Judge Harder has been on the bench for 20 years and certainly has a significant volume of custody cases in front of her, so I would just ask that the court affirm her order. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Appellant's out of time, over time, so you both are excused. Mr. Bacon and Ms. Shoemaker, thank you for appearing. Your case is submitted and you are excused.